and it feels good to be a bad guy. Telling stories that bring the underworld to life. Gangsters, mobsters, hustlers, monsters. Stars of the conversation as we sip on our libations. So come and share some laughs, it's true crime with a twist. Every episode's a banger, you don't wanna miss. Infamous criminal masterminds with fascinating lies. Blurring lies between truth and lies. We talk about.
So this is part two of the Bub Hewlett story. DC, you said we got you to switch to some bourbon, right? All the whiskey talk.
Well, it's not bourbon because everybody knows I'm partial to Canadian whiskey. So it's a little Crown. But I did go get whiskey because I felt left out. And I don't like.
Oh, you thought you were missing around, eh?
Exactly.
In your dope dragon's milk glass?
Yes.
I need a refill anyway, so I poured, I did go bourbon, but I got that Four Roses.
Nice. Yeah, I like that.
So when we left off, Bub and Bumpy Johnson had both had the two predominant gangs in the Harlem area. Over the next few years, they're kind of ships passing. So Bumpy started working mostly exclusively for Stephanie St. Clair. And then he also was in and out of prison. He did like 4 years in a row, and then he was just in and out of prison nonstop. And Bub was arrested over 40 times. So they were just always kind of around working the area, but like never at the same time. They just.
Well, if he was real quick, just doing the math in my head, if he's been in and out like 40 times, that means he must have just never done any serious time, pretty much, like probably nothing over 60 days or something.
Well, that's what it says. He beat most of the raps, but he was always getting arrested. So that's a lot of time in and out of county or just.
So he probably never went to like real prison, but he just spent a lot of jail time.
Right. And Bumpy was the opposite. Bumpy was in Danmora. He was in Elmira. He was in Sing Sing. He was in Alcatraz. Bumpy did a grand tour of all, like, went and did big time at every single prison. And the other guy was just in and out nonstop.
See, that's why you don't grow your business. Keep it nice and small, and you can do like 60 days here and there. You go big, hey, you gotta go to Elmira.
Bub's out here doing 1 weekend a month. Fucking Bumpy's going overseas.
He's right. He's what is that? He's in the reserves.
National Guard. Crime. Around early 1930, Bump was doing while he was in Danmora. Dutch Schultz began moving in on the Harlem numbers rackets to partner up with the policy bankers. And he was basically moving in on all the neighborhood policies and buying them out. And a lot of the guys that were making thousands a week went from making thousands to making hundreds. He was just, you know, buying everybody out cheap. In the system, he brought on Bob Hewlett because he was looking for the best muscle in town. He's like, I'm new to this neighborhood and I need some good muscle. I heard you're the guy. Bub was like, yep, that's me, Dutch. So he starts working with Bub, muscling in on the numbers bankers that he used to work protection for. Really?
I wonder, is that the guy depicted as his right man hand man in
Hoodlum?
Yeah.
It is.
Now I gotta go back and watch that movie and listen for, like, you know how there's always like little context clues of things that you miss when you don't know the story. Now I got to go back and watch it.
We'll talk about it a little bit. That'll come back in. So,
what's that famous meme of Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where he's like pointing at the TV all excited and stuff? That's DC when he watches Hoodlum. Like, yeah, I know him. I know him.
Then I got to tell everybody I'm watching it. See, you don't know the backstory. See,
yeah. Listen.
Right.
You never heard of the Harlem Batman.
Hello to the bad guy.
See, this dude, they said he's 6'8", but he really only 6'1".
He really 6'1".
Let me tell you a little tale about a pit named Yellow Shark.
Oh, that's funny.
So, 1931, Bub was sent to bring Stephanie St. Clair on board. So he went and reached out and was like, hey, Dutch Schultz is moving in the neighborhood and you're next in line. And she was talking mad shit to him. And he was like, look, he's ripping everybody else out, but he really wants to work with you. so you should at least just sit down with him and hear what he has to say. Like, he's not going to rip you off like he ripped everybody else off. And Stephanie St. Clair wasn't down.
We ain't hit her with the, like, listen, I know he's shady and rips everyone off. He's not going to do that to you, though.
You're different. See, you're different.
Yeah.
We covered Stephanie St. Clair on the podcast, so you can go back and listen to her episode. You can listen to Bumpy's episode. But she really didn't like listening to people that tried to tell her what she had to do, especially dudes. So she didn't like taking a lot of shit. So she was like, no, nah, fuck you. And Bub,
I believe the historians, they went back and they tested her DNA, and it turns out she's 100% that bitch. No, like, if you go back to listen to that episode, she definitely was a take-no-shit sort of lady.
So she's like, yeah, fuck that. We're not doing it. And he was like, they kind of had this respect. They were, you know, they had been working this area a long time. Like I said, they always kind of liked each other's don't-give-a-fuck attitude, except when you're working against the person, you know? He was like,
I really wish he gave a little bit of fuck.
Well, he said, look, the next person that comes isn't going to be as nice as I am. So you should just listen. And she was like, nah, fuck you. Fuck the Dutchman. Fuck all you guys. We'll go to war. And she didn't really have the gang for it. Bumpy was in jail. And Bumpy was just like a guy that had worked security for her. He'd been in prison a long time. So it's not like it was her guy. And so she cusses him out and she refuses and they begin aggressively moving into her territory. They hit her with all the tricks. I mean, they had her set up by cops, and she, you know, got arrested. They fucking hit her spots. They beat up her runners. They did all the tricks, and she was...
Just the classics.
Yeah. And her big thing was she... Most of the other bankers folded to Dutch Schultz pretty quick, and she was able to bring a lot on because she was always like, dude, I'm a girl. I'm going to stand up to him. You guys are dudes and you're bending over to this dude. You know, you're giving in to this guy. And so there was this handful of dudes that were always like
I really wish this was like Drunk History, where I'm like envisioning her saying all this, but it's what you're saying in your voice. Because you're just like, well, dude, like, fuck, what am I going to do? Like, I'm just imagining her saying all this.
Well, she was. So keep that imagination going. So she's getting her ass kicked, but she refused to give in. What she knows is that in 1932, Bumpy Johnson, star free agent, getting out of prison. So Bub did arrange a meeting with Bumpy before Stephanie St. Clair did. And they met, and Bub offered him a job doing security work. And he's like, hey, you just got out. You need to get back on your feet. I'll get you a job working security. And they bickered back and forth. Like, Bumpy was like, fuck you. Because he said, yeah, I heard what's going on in the neighborhood. I heard a bunch of treacherous blacks is working for this Dutch dude, stealing from their community. And Bub was like, all right, so, like, you're ready to, you know.
You in? Right.
You're feeling, so you're feeling you real big and shit. And he's like, look, I'll give you a job. And Bumpy's like, look, well, how much is the job? So Bub gives him all the information. So Bub was like, Bumpy's like, at least let me find out what they're paying. Because what he did was he took that information back to Stephanie St. Clair. And he's like, look, we at least got to pay our guys $200 a week. Plus we need guns. Plus we need bail. Because that's what Dutch is paying. So if we don't pay at least that, you know, why would they even work for us? But
competitive pricing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing some market research and like finding out like what's a guy like me worth on the market. So he goes back and he tells Bub, he's like, well, look, I don't know. I just got back. I've only been out a couple of days. I'm just back on the street. Let me find out what's going on and I'll get back to you. And Bub's like, all right, I want to hear from you before I hear from someone else what's going on. So Queen says she'll go to war. She gets her handful of dudes and they do like a collection and shit. They go like guerrilla style warfare. Small gang and shit, like 10 dudes, but they're well funded and they got just the guns and the bail money and whatever they need to take care of their people and shit. And Bumpy came back to Bub and told him. When they seen him, it was Bub by himself and Bumpy and like most of his gang and shit. And he was like, here, I'm just gonna go talk to him. And he went over and told Bub, he's like, yep, I'm gonna be with the Queen. And Bub was like, all right, that means, you know, you're going to be going against me and my guys.
Yeah.
And they're both kind of agreed, like, all right, well, we'll see what happens. And they shook hands and then both went their directions and went to fucking War Over Harlem's for the numbers racket with their old buddies.
They were the first SEALs team. So I just looked up when the Navy SEALs was established. It was in 1962. So this small force in Harlem was the first SEALs team. That's what I just heard you say. Really small, well-trained, a lot of guns, bail money, go out there and get shit done. That was what I just got from that.
Bumpy told Dutch Schultz, he said, you can't even tell us apart. He said, we can spot you the second you walk into our neighborhood.
He had a good point.
So they had several incidents over the next few months. I seen something that said they had both shot each other at one point. But within 6 months, Bub's partner asked him to get rid of his new girl's husband, a dude named Alonzo Scott. And Bub was like, yeah, I can do that.
There's a lot of weird requests that go on in this story.
Yeah.
I need $100. I just shot someone. Hey, I'm banging this chick, but she's married. Can you kill the husband?
You got to get rid of competition, man.
Yeah.
So they went and told Alonzo Scott to stay away from his wife. They're like, hey, she's got a new dude. You're out, Alonzo Scott.
Wait. Listen to how that's... Now stay away from my wife. Stay away from your wife. Listen, I'm going to need you to stay away from your wife. If you know what's good for you. I've never heard that request ever before.
Well, Alonzo Scott thought it was stupid, too. He's like, no, I'm going to go call my wife, man. Fuck you.
Yeah, what's weird is we're getting the backstory, like, before the request happened. But imagine being the one just chilling and somebody just pops up with this shit. Hey, man, stay away from your wife. Like, whoa, what the fuck?
So he still is trying to reach out to his wife, like, what's going on? Why do you got gangsters telling me to leave you alone and shit? And Alonzo ends up getting snatched off his street. He gets snatched off the street by Bub and his guys. They drove up, threw him in a car, and they drove him around for over an hour, beating him and stabbing him and burning him with cigarettes.
Wow.
And then they kicked him out of the car at the Harlem Hospital. He was stabbed 32 times.
That's the opposite of a joyride.
Well, I mean, you think about it, though. I mean, they didn't take him to the outskirts and leave him where he couldn't get medical help. They left him at the hospital. It's just a warning shot.
Yeah, those guys are cool. Yeah, they just drove around stabbing him up in the backseat for an hour.
But think about it. It was only 30, what did you say, 32 times?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was only, it wasn't like it was 40 or 50 times.
Wait, 40 is the line?
Yeah. That's the 40's the mark. That's the cutoff. You stab somebody 40 times, that's bad, but 32 times, you know, take them to the hospital.
I mean, really, my cutoff's like more around 37, so they were getting close. And how many cigarette burns? Because, I mean, I'll give them three. If they do more than a handful of burns...
They probably didn't count those.
I'm more perturbed by the waste of gas. Like, pull over and find a spot. Why do we got to drive around? What are we doing here?
See, this was before all the gas embargoes, though. Gas was really cheap back then. So for them, it was like, yeah, that's nothing. Gas.
So Alonzo did what Bub had thought was outrageous and he had never considered was an option. Because he told Alonzo Scott was like, hey, fucking Bub Hewlett stabbed me 32 times, drove me around, beat me up and burned me with cigarettes. And shit.
That's the last time I'll do something nice for him, taking him to the hospital. No good deed goes unpunished.
Why just like the fact of just they're like, hey, don't talk to your wife or we're going to fuck you up. He's like, well, I'm going to call her up and get to the bottom of this. Like, think of, that is the opposite of what we just told you. Like, that's probably why they were pissed. Like, we just told you, dude. What do you do? It's like telling the toddler, like, hey, don't put that in your mouth. Then they lock eyes with you and slowly just put it up to their mouth. Like, motherfucker, what did I just say?
So, Alonzo agreed to testify. He showed up in court, heavily bandaged. He still had, like, visible cigarette burns on him. So his testimony went over pretty well with the jury. And Bub Hewlett ended up getting sentenced to 5 years in prison.
Damn. That's like 10 of his other lockups combined.
All right, we're going to take a quick smoke break, refill our drinks, and we'll be back in a minute.
Pull up, roll something if you choose to. Intermission time, business to tend to. We'll be back in a minute or two. Say hello to the bad guy coming back at you, yeah.
All right, we're back. So he goes to prison for 5 years. While he's in prison, Dutch Schultz, he ends up getting killed. Bumpy takes over. Basically, the whole landscape changes. So he gets out of prison. He just decides to retire completely from the street life and retires and moves back down south.
So he just went Benjamin Button. He just came out, like, just regressed all the way back to where it all began. Nope, I'm done, and I'm going back to the center.
Yeah, maybe he had a hard time doing time. His whole life, he had just been in and out and small arrests and stuff like that, and it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, well, how old is he by this point?
Well, it'd be old, so it'd be like 1940 he gets out, so he'd be like 52.
Yeah, fuck that, he's old. See, a young dude goes to prison, he comes out like deeper in the shit, an old man goes to prison, he's like, yeah, I'm tired of it, I'm out.
Yeah, I think, too, probably it's a factor, you know, something you mentioned before, Duke, and just the whole him getting these small sentences, that he probably got that big one. Then he came back out and he knew if you got to start over in this new game, you got to be ruthless. And the chances of you going back and doing those kind of years again, he probably just said, he did the Danny Glover. He was like, I'm too old for this shit. decided no.
So it gets depicted a lot like they were big rivals through the Dutch Schultz fight. But there's only a 6 month overlap between Bumpy getting out and Bub like going in. Wow. So that was barely, like, most of the fight against Dutch Schultz, Bub had nothing to do with it. He actually was replaced because Dutch always wanted to have, like, a guy that was in Harlem. So after Bub went to prison, there was a guy. We covered it in the Bumpy, DC, you were on the Bumpy Johnson episode. Mm-hmm. Dutch Schultz brought in another guy from the neighborhood after that. But Bub Hewlett was really barely even in that fight. And you see, even when he was in the fight, he was out doing side hits for jealous dudes that don't like their girl's actual husband.
Sometimes you gotta stab a man 32 times, you know?
So his children, he had three boys, two became doctors and one became a dentist. And then his daughter...
Look at that third guy is pissed. He's like, I'm a doctor too!
His daughter runs one of the largest adoption agencies in New York. Or ran. Ran one of the largest adoption agencies in New York. But Bub paid for all their educations in grad school. I actually think a lot of people wonder why. I mean, it's obviously odd that he was working with Dutch Schultz. But one thing I think they seem to really have in common is if you look, a lot of the Jewish mobsters were one generational mobsters. Like, they were a gangster, they were a criminal, and they took all that money, and they sent their kids to school and bought assets and took care of their family and set them off for life. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of what Bub Hewlett did also. And I think they kind of had that in common. So he did spend most of his life working as a criminal and punching and shooting and stabbing people. But, I mean, he did use his money to take care of his kids, and now they're like, oh, got badass jobs and shit.
I mean, America is built on that. Not to mention, that's one of the few areas investing in people is one of the few areas that even after you get caught for whatever crimes you've done, they can't take back. So let's say if you have all the money, you do nothing but crimes. You have all the money to send your kids to all the best schools and everything. And they come back because they found you did all these crimes. They start confiscating cars and houses. They can't take back what you invested in your kids, right? So now if all of them are doing good and prosperous and, you know, making hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars a year, it was a good investment. So I think it's smart. And, you know, the Italian mafia, as we know, not only did they do that, they were smart enough to get their people into politics. So now you can start making laws and everything else. So, I mean, I think it's a great plan and a large part of what America was founded on.
Yeah, well, I mean, we covered a lot. Well, we got an episode that's on the premium content where we covered the Galveston Mafia, which is direct lineage to the Fertittas that now mm-hmm. own giant resorts and gambling establishments, now just legally, but it's kind of the same thing that tracks back all this time. And it's just gone from put the people in the positions politically, and you know, you get the right degrees and you have a lawyer and you have all this stuff. And now it's legal, and now you're just a successful businessman.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So what I just heard was I should start a life of crime now. And right. have a bunch of kids to, you know, because I'm old already. So it's not like they, how yeah. many, how much time can they really give me?
You know? It's a little late, but you know, you could probably make it work.
Hey, you gotta do what you can, you know?
But yeah, even once he got out, like, so he retired, but even when he come back to the neighborhood, he go over to Bumpy's to eat and shit like that. They had a weird relationship. Well, I guess you work over there, I work over there. We have to go fight out there or whatever, but like, well, now I'm back out of jail. I ain't really working for nobody. Like, well, want to come over and grub or whatever?
It's like if you ever watch when they have these, I don't even know what to call them, like MMA guy meetups where they'll have four different champions or whatever that may have exchanged belts with each other. They do the same thing in boxing, and they'll have them all at kind of a round table. A lot of them are like friends now and stuff. But they got this history and this back and forth of which they hated each other or whatever else. But it's like, we're old and everything is cool. And that was a battle. And sometimes people get stabbed 32 times, you know, let's get a burger.
It happens. Ain't nothing personal. It's just work.
It's just work, baby.
Oh, yeah. Bumpy Johnson's wife, she's just so Bumpy. You got to let me know if you're bringing Bub over. It's never because she minded. He was always nice. He just ate so much. She's like, I got to cook extra if he's coming. So you got to let me know. Going to eat all the fucking food up.
Nice.
So let me try and do this. Share the screen. Let's see if this was going to work this time. Tell me if you guys. Look at that. That worked quick.
Perfect.
So you guys haven't seen a picture of Bub Hewlett yet, but you have seen Hoodlum.
Yep.
So this is his name is Clarence Williams.
You know, I don't know any actors' names.
I just know him as Samson from Half Baked.
Clarence Williams the Third. Wasn't he also the devil guy in Tales from the Hood?
Yeah. Yep.
Scary actor dude, but
you'll be knee deep in the shit.
So the thing with Hoodlum, everybody that knew Bob. Anybody that's ever gone on the record, they would say that that's the thing that was the most historically inaccurate regarding the movie, is the portrayal of Bub Hewlett. Because for one, like I said, he was only there for 6 months, so he wasn't like a fixture or whatever. But they said the way it was portrayed, like there's that scene where he made him wrap up all the scrap food and told him, like, don't be proud and take it to his kids and stuff like that. Like, everybody that knew Bub was like, no, that shit wouldn't fly. You would have to just shoot him because he didn't take shit like that. So, like, the fact that the portrayal in the movie of him being the guy that was getting picked on and disrespected. So, whatever reasons he chose to work with Dutch Schultz is unknown, but he definitely wasn't anybody's stooge.
Why are people ever surprised about Hollywood's liberties? Hollywood, at any point in time, has an agenda that they're going to push. And they're going to push that agenda. And they really don't give a fuck what you think about it. You know what I mean? It's so like, you know, we covered the dudes that's like, what is it called? Not the Lost Guns. What's the Young Guns and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's so many times that you realize that Hollywood's going to take their liberties for whatever reason, for whatever they're trying to get across. And I really don't understand why people get so like, their panties in a bunch about it. They've been doing it for, you know, 100 years. Why would it change today?
Yeah. But I've never seen Hoodlum or whatever. But
really?
Could it be also because Of course, he's a historical guy or whatever, but were they trying to use that as just to show the general relationship between, like, the Italian mobsters and the Irish mobsters and stuff in the black community? Like, that in general, they tried to treat black people that way, and they're just...
Yeah, well, it was like Dutch Schultz. He was a Jewish gangster, and it was definitely like he portrayed him as lesser than. Like, he was the help.
Yeah, like, it's not because Bub, obviously, he was one of the guys that wouldn't take that shit. But maybe they were just trying to show, like, the general relationship was trying to treat black people that way.
Well, and one of the weird things is not only did Bub Hewlett not take shit, one of the reasons he probably was working with Dutch Schultz is Dutch Schultz is actually one of the original gangsters that, yeah, he was a dirtball and sure, like, he was obnoxious or whatever, but he was one of the original gangsters that didn't care what your nationality was. Like, his gang was just whatever. It's more likely that he worked with them because he was willing to work with them when other people wouldn't. But it portrays it a lot more like, no, he just had them under his boot or whatever, so.
They misconstrued their entire relationship. But like DC said, it's kind of par for the course now.
Well, I would recommend you watch Hoodlum. It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it was one of the few movies I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, like DC said, like whenever I watch, like, even the ones that claim to be like historically accurate and shit, I'll still hop on YouTube and there'll be at least 5 different videos like the truth behind this or that or whatever, and you get like the real story.
At Tombstone, you know, one of my all-time favorite movies. Years later, once I looked into that, I realized most of that shit wasn't accurate, but it made a good-ass movie.
See, that's one of those very interesting ones where a lot of shit wasn't accurate, but at the same time, a lot of it was accurate. Like, that really split the middle.
So that's the story of Bub Hewlett.
So say goodnight to the bad guy. Come on. The last time you're going to see a bad guy like this again, let me tell you.
Well, this is Say Hello to the Bad Guy. Thanks for coming, and thanks for listening.
Man, it feels good to be a bad guy. Telling stories that bring the underworld to life. Gangsters, mobsters, hustlers, monsters. Stars of the conversation as we sip on our libations. So come and share some laughs, it's true crime with a twist. Every episode's a banger, you don't want to miss. Infamous criminal masterminds with fascinating lies. Blurring lies between truth and lies. We talk about killers with mob ties. Extortionists, wise guys, crack jokes, have a few drinks. It's a good time, made men who made men tremble for a living. May have ended up in prison, but they still made a killing, yeah. We keep it real gangster up on this side. Some good fellas, but no more Mr. Nice Guy. Chronoline criminal minds, we are street certified. Say hello to the bad guy. Say hello to the bad guy, bad guy. Say hello to the bad guy, bad guy. Say hello to the bad guy, we're street certified. Say hello to the bad guy.